case this morning, Singh v. Holder.
Good morning, Your Honors. Edwin Gagne on behalf of the petitioner. In this immigration case, the petitioner sought the relief of cancellation of removal, which requires three different things. One, be physically present in the U.S. for 10 years. Second, be a person of good moral character during that period. And finally, the only issue that's at stake is whether or not there was exceptional and extremely unusual hardship to the applicant's qualifying relatives, which in this case are his three U.S. citizen children, aged 11, 10, and 7. While this court lacks jurisdiction over the ultimate discretionary decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals, through its own precedent, it does claim jurisdiction over the constitutional claims and questions of law, which include a misapplication of the legal standard and overlooking key aspects of the record. So first, we contend that there is a misapplication of the legal standard. At the outset, we note that the record comprises 600 pages, but the operative portion of the board's decision is only three paragraphs. First, the board dismisses the in those three paragraphs, it seems to presume that each hardship factor stands on its own in regards to establishing hardship, that they should not be considered in the aggregate. And this is a very key mistake in terms of the standard to be applied. In the first paragraph of the decision, it discusses the children's medical issues, and it states that this does not comprise a basis for hardship, as if on its own it should comprise the hardship and not in the aggregate. In the third paragraph, it refers to the economic conditions and reduced educational opportunities present in India and says that these generally are insufficient to form the basis for hardship. Again, on its own, it seems it must do that. Later in the third paragraph, it makes reference to the children's inability to read and write Punjabi and states that this does not present an exceptional, extremely unusual hardship. Again, on its own, at every turn, it discusses a hardship factor and says that it does not meet the requirement. There's no consideration that they should be weighed, and we contend that weighing all the factors together would result in the level of hardship. Indeed, there's not even a summary statement that this was done, that a weighing was made in the aggregate.
The immigration judge did do that aggregate weighing.
Yeah, he did. But here we're looking at the board decision. But yes, the immigration judge made that reference that he made the same mistake. I don't think he actually ever put any substance, though, behind that.
What more does he have to say?
Well, there should be, with the record so long, there should be some assessment. There should be just string a few sentences together saying what the level of hardship is and how it's lacking to meet the standard. It's a very complex issue as to the family that's going there and the conditions that they face. And there should be a weighing, there should be an assessment that these factors taken together don't meet the standard. Maybe why they don't, or if something was different, why it would.
That sounds like the kind of question that we would have trouble finding jurisdiction over. Parsing that closely what an immigration judge has said. The judge has said, I've considered these cumulatively, and that's not enough. How do we get to a constitutional issue or a disagreement about the meaning of a legal text so that we might have jurisdiction over that?
Well, I'm looking at the board's decision for purposes of this appeal.
But don't we also look at the IJ's opinion?
It seems as though the board made its own analysis, and I was presuming that it was based on the board's decision. I'm not sure that he specifically adopted the immigration judge's decision.
Well, the board did say it agreed with the immigration judge's determination on this issue. The fact that the board offered some additional explanation, I don't think supplants or suggests that the board was setting it aside.
Okay, fine. Well, the immigration judge actually did make that statement, but in his long decision that he made, he didn't actually say how he concluded that. He just made that statement that in the aggregate, it does not meet the standard. And I would prefer that just there be some substance to that, because that's the key part of the case. I mean, that long decision that he had, that statement with no basis really shouldn't carry any meaning and should be construed as a misapplication of legal standard. Okay, in any event, the second issue is we say that both the board and the judge overlook key aspects of the record. The biggest hardship factor here is the poverty that's endemic in India, and there's really no discussion of that by the board or the judge.
Are you taking the position that anybody who's facing removal to India then is going to be able to show exceptional and extremely unusual hardship?
No, it really wouldn't include everyone in that regard. Although I should point out that the case law is usually in regards to Mexico, and that India has actually one-third of the per capita income that Mexico has. But here there are other factors. The factors are the three children, that he has no family back in India to provide any kind of support, that with his job skills he probably would not be able to find employment. So, no, we're saying in this case, with three children, without the assets to make a transition possible, that it would meet the standard. And even in the judge's decision, there's no discussion whatsoever of any of these crucial details in terms of whether or not there's sufficient hardship.
I don't think that's accurate. The immigration judge did talk about the financial and economic hardships that the family would face. And the board addressed that at least in a couple of sentences about in connection with addressing the educational deficits that the children would face, and in addition, the lower standard of living economically and the economic detriment to the family that might ensue. So there is at least some discussion of that issue in both of these opinions. And it may not be as thorough as you would like, but it's hard to conclude that it was overlooked entirely. And that's the legal argument you have to get in the door on.
It just seems to me that those are really summary statements and that there's no factual analysis to the poor conditions these children face. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Counsel.
May it please the Court, my name is Craig Newell, and I'm here on behalf of the Attorney General. This Court should dismiss Mr. Singh's petition for review for lack of jurisdiction. The Court lacks jurisdiction to review the Board's decision here because it denied Mr. Singh's application for cancellation of removal based on its discretionary hardship determination. And Mr. Singh has failed to raise any colorable constitutional claims or questions of law to otherwise create jurisdiction. Now, Mr. Singh has raised two arguments that he purports to be questions of law, but in reality, they are nothing more than abuse of discretion-type challenges disguised as legal claims. The first question is whether the board applied the correct legal standard. And here, Mr. Singh hasn't met his burden of – the board has a presumption that it applies the law and its precedent correctly. Here, the board cited its precedential decision in matter of Montreal, which lays out the legal standard of looking at all the hardship factors in the aggregate. The board thoroughly went through the evidence. Mr. Singh quarrels with the fact that they were in this sequential recounting of the evidence. But that just really shows that the board went through all the evidence. It did not need to expressly say use those terms in the aggregate, accumulative, for it to be said to have applied the legal standard correctly. And with respect to the second question is whether the board ignored Mr. Singh's evidence regarding where his immediate and distant relatives are living. And an argument that the board or the immigration judge completely ignored evidence would constitute question of law reviewable here, but that is not the case. The board clearly stated in its decision that while Mr. Singh does not have immediate family members in the area. His wife's family remain in another village in Punjab, and two of his uncles also live there, and that while he's not in close contact with these other relatives, he may be able to call upon them for some help during his transition back to India. What Mr. Singh is arguing with is the inference the board made based on that evidence of where his family that he has these distant relatives there, and this is then just a challenge to the board's discretionary power to make that inference. So, under this court's precedent, these two arguments that Mr. Singh raises do not rise to the level of reviewable questions of law, and without such questions, the court lacks jurisdiction over Mr. Singh's petition for review and should dismiss it accordingly. And if there's no further questions, I thank you for your time.
Well, Your Honor, we just state that we feel it behooves the board to make a statement that in the aggregate it considered the factors and provide a substantive basis for stating that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.